Commission. It's now 10 a.m. on Thursday, August 17th, and I'm calling the meeting to order. This meeting is open to the public. We will take time at the end of this meeting for a brief public comment period. Participants will have no more than 3 minutes to address the commission. As a reminder, commissioners are not to engage in conversations with observers when listening to the public comments. As a courtesy, we encourage all participants to mute themselves when they're not speaking to reduce the background noise. One of our challenges is also remembering to unmute yourself when speaking. So for the commissioners, to help us capture information correctly, can you please share names when making comments? We'll move into item number two of roll call. So at this time, I'll ask Sandra to call and confirm attendance of all commissioners. When she stated your name, please respond verbally with here or present to confirm attendance.
Thank you. Chair Clausen.
Here.
Thank you. Vice Chair Chang.
Here.
Commissioner Schmitz.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Fabiola Macias.
Here.
Thank you. Commissioner Jones Schroeder.
Here.
Commissioner Brazil.
Here.
And I believe that's everyone. Back to you.
Great. Thank you. We will move on to our next agenda item number three, the approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve our agenda?
So moved.
And a second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Quick discussion. Ooh, I've got a bad echo. Can you guys hear me okay?
It's better now. Yep.
Okay, sorry. So under new business, it says none. I do have an item I would like to bring up when we get to new business. So if that's okay, if it's not too late to do that.
Sandy, can we
add? Let me pop in here real quick. We're unable to bring anything up that is not part of the published agenda. If you would like at the end, we can add it to the meeting agenda for the next meeting.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Sabrina. So any other discussion on the agenda? We had a motion and a second. So all in approve?
Aye.
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 Okay. Any oppose? Okay, so our agenda for today has been approved. We'll move on to our meeting minutes from May 18th of 2023. Do I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Great, so I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any oppose? Okay, so our meeting minutes for May 18th, 2023 have been approved. Now we'll move on to our agenda item number five, awards and recognition. So this is one of my favorite things to do. We get to recognize one of our commissioners. It's actually an outgoing commissioner, Sherry Song. Thank you so much for your dedicated time to the Real Estate Commission. I've enjoyed getting to work with you in this role, and I wish you all the best as you take on other adventures in the future. So I'm not sure if any of the other commissioners would like to say a few words.
I would just echo that sentiment. I've enjoyed getting to know you a little bit, Sherry, although in this post-COVID world, get to know you in your little Zoom or Google box, right? But it's just been a real pleasure to work with you and wish you all the best. You'll be missed.
Congratulations, Sherry. Thank you for setting an example for us new ones and wishing you all the best.
Yes, thank you, Sherry. You're such a great example.
I would also like to add, on behalf of the staff, we have really enjoyed working with you and getting to know you. We appreciate your input your expertise and all the help that you did with the subcommittees that you were on. We really appreciate your time, your effort, and we wish you nothing but the best. Thank you so much.
Okay, I just want to say a few words. Thank you so much. I'm really going to miss some of you. Working with you guys has been, a lot of fun and interesting. And it was nice when we used to meet in person. And like Sabrina, we got to meet in person before. And so that's my only regret, that I didn't get to meet some of the new staff and new commissioners in person. But it was still great working with everyone via Zoom. I just want to say it was an honor for me for the last 6 years to serve as commissioner and advocating for the professionals in our profession that I've loved for the last 30 years. So thank you. I was honored, and I'm going to miss you guys.
Thanks, Sherry. Okay, on to our next agenda item is old business. So, Sandy, I believe this I turn over to you to talk about our customer response time.
Yes, I'm super excited. This was an agenda item that Commissioner Schroeder Jones had requested at our last meeting, and that I was not quick enough to get the stats in for our last meeting, but I was able to get the stats. I'm really excited to say that the average wait time for phone calls in June was 11 minutes and for July is 13 minutes. And customer service teams are currently working at the end of June emails. So they should be starting on the July emails by the end of this week, beginning of next week. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Andy, do you know what, do we have the data that shows where we're, what we're processing work at? So applications or renewals?
That's a really great question. I did not include that in my data ask. So if you would like, I can have this make this an ongoing agenda item report out so that I can get a full range of data and that I can just report out on it on every meeting.
I guess my question would be to the commissioners if that's helpful for them. From a business standpoint, it's important to me, but I use it for different reasons. Or is there anything
like
else, the commissioners? Oh, okay. Yeah, if there's anything else that would be helpful for us to include.
I think I continue to get the occasional, certainly not as much as I used to, but I do get the occasional, the customer service complaint, right? That I'm having struggles with SAW, I'm having struggles with that process. And when I call, I got to be honest, I'm a bit surprised to hear the hold times are only 11 and 13 minutes, because when I have people call me, they've told me they're still on hold for an hour. So it must just be time of day that they're calling, you know, that the average is 13 and 11, because we do still have licensees calling in and they're on hold for an hour. So I think reporting out at every commission meeting probably is helpful. It's a bit of a holding our feet to the fire, right? If we're still dealing with emails that are 6 weeks old and our licensees are on hold for 11, 13 minutes, I think it's actually longer, probably during business hours. It's still a problem. Especially when, and I think it's really heightened by the fact that we've got a lot of folks that are dual licensed. And I don't mean to compare Washington Department of Licensing against like Idaho Real Estate Commission, but this just simply isn't an issue, in other states. And so, though we have improved tremendously, and kudos to the staff, for tackling this and working hard to address this concern, it's still a problem. And I don't want us to lose sight of that just because we keep talking about it right at every commission meeting. So from my perspective, and I would welcome the other commissioners to chime in from what they hear from constituents that they might speak with, but this is an ongoing struggle.
I have a question on this issue, and that is, how would you characterize the staffing currently at DOL compared to goals and plans? I mean, are you guys at your maximum staff level that you can do, or are you severely short staffed, or what's impacting?
We do need to hold public comments until the end. But that is certainly some great questions. If you could bring them up again at the public comments, or if Chair Klassen would like to open public comments for just this agenda item, that's a possibility. But at this point, we're having a discussion with the commission members.
Sandy, I mean, I can respond to that if the commission is interested in a response to those questions. I definitely don't have anything to, you know, I'm willing to answer those questions for sure if we want to add that into this discussion, or we can end it at an end. I'm not sure what's appropriate.
No, let's talk about it now.
Okay, absolutely. So I can talk about my staffing. Currently, I am overstaffed in this area. I have a couple of additional non-perms or temporary employees that I have brought on over the last year to try to address this issue in this profession. It's not a long-term solution. It is a temporary solution till I can continue to get some things working with SAW and some system issues to make sure that we're able to handle our customer inquiries. The struggle that we're having, I would say, is probably similar to what most industries are having with turnover in staff. So I do have, you know, a couple additional FTEs that I've brought in, like I said, but I'm constantly training and people are leaving. And so as soon as you get them productive in their area, they find another job or want to, you know, get something else to do. And then we're back over training again. This particular division and within this business line, prior to COVID, we hadn't experienced turnover like this before. You may get one person that turned over, but we had a lot of long-term employees that stayed in positions. And so it is something that we're definitely feeling in lots of areas. So I have upped our staffing to try to help take care of our customer needs the best that we can, but we are still struggling. We also have, I'm wondering, Sabrina, you mentioned we're still getting complaints about customers are waiting over an hour. With our average being 11 minutes and 13 minutes, what I'm worried about is we're hearing that people are ending up with phone numbers that actually aren't connected with us anymore. So they hold for these long periods of time and then they actually get disconnected and they never ring in through our system. So we are trying to work on updating phone numbers to make sure that if there's a phone number that's out there somewhere that's going to nowhere, that we're also being able to solve some of those issues as well. But it is also really challenging. Even an 11 and a 13 minute hold time is too long. For me, I feel like we should be answering them a little bit faster than that, but it's much better than what it was. So we'll continue to still drive that.
This is Casey Brazil. I just wanted to ask, how much of it is phone calls versus the emails? I mean, is it 80% of the communications coming in emails and 20% phone calls?
I would need to get that data for you, Casey, but I will tell you this from a from an operational standpoint, phone calls do take a priority and processing work takes a priority over emails. And it has to, because otherwise we just drowned ourselves. I don't have enough staff to really spread and have pockets on just doing those individual things. So we prioritize work to ensure that we're responding as quickly as we can. But we aren't able to just shut our phones off and just focus on emails and just process work, right? So we shift some work duties. We're looking at how to be the most efficient. We're also looking at, we have 42 different types of professions that we manage within the Department of Licensing, within my division. And part of that is looking at how can we share some resources so that if one area is starting to hit a higher call volume, or they're starting to get behind in their applications, how do we shift that so we can predict for those peaks and valleys so that all of our customers can get a little bit better service level? Like right now, for example, our cosmetologists, we had something that caused us a great huge spike in the backlog and us actually being able to process their work and handle their phone calls and such. And so it's nice when we're able to kind of help each other and still be able to take care of the customers as a whole. So we're looking at it in a couple of different ways to try to keep our heads above water.
I think that's great. And I do understand, you know, the turnover thing is something everyone is dealing with across the board. So I completely understand that. I think if we did, kind of as Sabrina said, if we got an update every meeting with just where they are, then we can kind of gauge, you know, how it's going and if it's getting better too. So
absolutely. We have nothing to hide there. I love being able to share this information.
Great.
This is Shelly Schmitz. Another thing, do you track the what type of calls and what type of emails, like the topic? Are you seeing a trend with any certain topics?
That's a great question. And we will need to dig into that a little bit. We don't have an automated way of tracking that. One would think that we might. At this point, we don't, but I am looking at a new phone service for us. We're on a really old phone service through Avaya is the system that we're on, and it doesn't give us nearly the data that I would love to see in order to be able to make like really smart decisions about how to shift resources and how to staff different areas. But we are looking at a new one that's through Amazon Connect that we've had some really great luck with in another part of the organization. And it would give us a lot more data points so we could actually understand what our customers calling in for. And is there a way that we could get that information out to help like reduce some of those phone calls coming in to be able to help our customers to create that space for those customers that have no way other than to call us to be able to resolve an issue. The other thing that we're looking at with that is for a way for, with the Amazon Connect, it provides us an opportunity to take payment over the phone. So there's some technology we're just really behind in because we haven't had the right, technology software to be able to handle some of it. But we have an increased, request for, can I just pay for this over the phone, which would take less time than us walking them through their SAW account and getting them into the system, right? So those are high on our radar, and hopefully within the next year or sooner, I'm hoping in the next 6 months or so, we'll be rolling some of that out. But we are actively involved in looking into that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is Eddie Chang. For the average wait times, does that include disconnects? Because I know for a lot of times I'm on the phone, I'm driving between appointments, and then I call, and then if I wait too long, I'm just going to disconnect and try again later.
That would be under, we refer to those as abandons, so they would not be in the average wait time. Eddie, I think the average wait time is calculated from the time someone starts on hold and actually connects with one of our representatives. The other number that you're talking about when we get frustrated and hang up, because I do the same thing, that would just count as an abandon. So we take a look at those also and the percentage of calls that we're answering when they come in. So all of that data kind of goes in together to show a better picture. And we know with this different phone software that we'll actually have better data to be able to break it down and understand where we're losing people. At what point do customers say, like, I'm done holding, I'm going to abandon? That's really important to know where you want your average connect time, right? So that we're moving the phone calls along and being able to help customers and not getting them discouraged and abandoning.
So sorry, I didn't say my name before my last comment. Hard to get in that habit. This is Sabrina Jones Schroeder. So when you say you're overstaffed, you meant you've brought on these
additional.
Okay. And then with regard to this new phone system, when I was thinking about the question, you know, can we track sort of what the calls are about? That took me to the thought that, you know, if you could, and there was often a call about this one thing, right? There could be a video that could be done. And I know we did that right before with many of the things that were coming in, but would this Amazon Connect system, would it be an automated system where the customer or licensees go into this, as my father would have called it, the automated voicemail hell, right? Of, if this is your issue, push one. If this is your issue, push two. If this is your issue, push three. So it would be in an automated fashion then tracking what the issue is. Is that probably how that works?
It's more automated than that, Sabrina. We don't like to have customers push a bunch of buttons because that is super frustrating. But we are looking at it with we're looking at a lot of our processes through like what they refer to as human-centered design, where it's really about the end user's experience and our employees' experience, because both of them matter to be able to actually have a healthy environment to get that work done. With the Amazon Connect, it's much more in tune to some of that. Some of it is through some artificial intelligence, how it keeps data, and different things. We're just starting to get some of the demos and ask some of our questions about what it can do for us, and we'll have to more than likely implement it in phases. So we'll take one part of the phase and then be able to continue to enhance it so that it gets better for our customers. And they may be able to talk through it to express what they need, and it records it that way. But there's lots of different options to be able to get that better data. We've just been a very old system that in order to get some of that data, we would have the 17 numbers you would have to push. And that's just a terrible customer experience. So we don't want to lose the customer experience as we improve, you know, some of the ways that we can help our customers through this. And then it would be used to say, like, what kind of information do we need to get out to help our customers be able to get through some of this work? There's another part of it that you all have brought up, and that's around SAW and some of the issues with SAW. And I have just been appointed to a work group with WATEC, who oversees SAW for the state. They're working on revamping it, and they've invited us to the table to explain our issues that we're having and bring forward ideas of what we need in order to be able to be much more successful with that integration with our systems. So I'm excited to be able to be at the table for that as well and bring forward some of the frustration that we're having with our customers not being able to get through and the work that it's creating for us. So it sounds like we've got some additional data that we want to add to this, Sandy, and we will bring it forward every month with kind of a roll up of, and we can work on being able to present it in a way that it gives a little bit a clearer picture of what our service is as a total with our emails, our phones, and processing work.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I've made note of this, and I'll start working on putting together some reports for the next meeting. Thank you.
Great. So, Sandy, we have moving on to 6.2, the University of Washington Center for Real Estate Research. I know we did some research. The commission asked for some research, and you are going to give us a little bit of a report out on that today.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this. We had been tasked with asking for this report. I think it was in the February meeting. The report has been completed. Mr. Steven Barossa, due to state scheduling conflicts, was not able to attend our meeting today. So I'm just going to give a very high-level report out on the data results. And we have invited him to the November meeting to go in depth about the process and about how all the data formulated and all deep down. Next slide, please. Just a high level is for the managing brokers. They did several different research points with several different states. And on average, Washington State dropped about 18 percentage points, while a combination of the other states that they researched dropped about 10 percentage points. And that's for the managing brokers. Next slide, please. For brokers by state, Washington declined about 13 percentage points, while the other states were down about 5. And while our drop was significant, there are still 3 of the other states that are lower than Washington. That would be Alabama, Arizona, and Virginia. So this is just a high level results of the research that they did. And in November, I expect that Mr. Barossa will be able to answer in depth any questions you all might have. But in the meantime, is there anything I might be able to answer for you?
This, I don't know if you can answer this. This is Shelley Schmitz. Was there a change in who in the testing or for everyone to have a decline?
That's a great question, and I am not sure about what spurred the decline. I don't have any foundation of how he collected the data, where the data came from, or what spurred the changes in the data. He might be able to speak to that in November.
Okay.
I just wanted to get the product results out as soon as we got them, so that at least the commission could see the data and maybe be able to formulate some great questions for him when he appears before the commission in November. Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay, so moving on, we have no new business. So we'll move to number 8, the reports. We have some subcommittee report outs. So the first one is the education subcommittee. And Sabrina, that looks like it's headed to you.
Thank you. Yes, so Sabrina Jones Schroeder, I sit on the education subcommittee, and we would like to present to the commission for your consideration the 2024-25 current issues in Washington real estate, the residential course curriculum, and then I believe Casey will be presenting the commercial core. Not really much different than what I presented, I believe, at the last commission meeting. There will be 3 sections. Again, it will be 3 hours. 3 sections will include forms review and updates, legislative updates, and business practices and professional standards. Under the forms review, the suggested topics to be covered or forms would be the evidence of funds, the inspection addendum, the inspection response, buyer broker compensation, covering the new forms that became effective under the statewide form system this past month, and conversation regarding earlier delayed occupancy, agency law, pamphlet, which will be changing come January, and earnest money issues. In the second educational topic area, the legislative updates, we anticipate instructors would spend the majority of the time in that section discussing the reformation to the real estate agency law, and then touch on several other pieces of legislation that were adopted, but really just very, very much just touch on them because there's quite a few. And then in the third topic area, business practices and professional standards, raising the bar of professionalism in all interactions, managing broker responsibilities regarding managing a firm or branch or as a team leader, multiple offer scenarios, risky practices in an abundant market. We did discuss dropping that because those are in the current core, but this is still happening. These are there are still multiple offer scenarios, and the market is still abundant, certainly in some areas and certainly some micro markets within the larger markets. So we felt it needed to be covered again. Discussion regarding transaction coordinators. And I'm super excited that we got some feedback from the investigation and audit division with regard to reviewing the top violations by brokers and discussing the infraction and the law that's applicable. I just think it will be super handy for our licensees across the state to know what their fellow licensees are getting in trouble for, right? Like what seem to be the major problems. And there's 6 topics there. And then finally touching on broker personal safety. So those are the topics that we're proposing for the residential core curriculum. We did drop, by the way, the fair housing component as that's being covered now in the required fair housing class. And I think that's it, unless the commissioners have any questions or thoughts or concerns.
Okay, thank you so much. Commissioner Brazil, would you go ahead and do a quick summary over the commercial?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Sabrina covered about 90% of it. The difference on the commercial side that we're going to see is the exception for commercial real estate within the service agreement requirements. So as we go through the agency law updates, you'll see that exception in there. We also have the introduction of limited dual agency, the new terminology that will be updated that everybody will see with the new pamphlet. We have then also competition in commercial brokerage. That's going to be a key item for everyone to see, and I'm excited that that will be in there because there are some major updates nationally that we'll see of how it affects us in the state of Washington. Past that, that's I think we're pretty much covered. We do have just on specific educational items, commercial real estate transaction forms, the resources available for that, service agreements. So that pretty much covers it for commercial.
Thank you so much. Were there any questions about the commercial core? Okay, great. I just wanted to say thank you so much for the education subcommittee for all of your hard work in getting this up and running. We really appreciate it. I did want to say that the next project will be the education committee just received a memo from PSI about updating their testing. So that will be the next project that the education committee digs in on. Thank you so much for your hard work. It's been a pleasure working with you.
I want to give a shout out to staff as well. Sandy and Tim did a great job of getting us meeting on a regular basis. I feel like the creation of the core and just getting it all pulled together this year went as smoothly as I've ever seen it go. And I think the product we're bringing to the real estate schools to put together their curriculum is as good as it's ever been. Sorry, this is Sabrina Jones Schroeder. Forgot to say that at the beginning. I will figure this out probably right when we go back to in-person meetings, right? So thank you to staff for all of your work on that. Just point of clarification, does the commission need to vote to approve these core curricula? Okay, so if so, I move to approve the residential and the commercial core as presented.
I second.
Do we have, do we need to call for a vote, right, Sandy?
Yes, that's correct. This needs to be voted on.
Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, so moved.
Thank you so much.
Sabrina Jones Schroeder again. So may I ask staff when, now that it's been approved by the commission, when will the core be made available to the education providers so they can start writing and submitting for approval?
That's a great question. And I am going to say that we will get it out as soon as possible. It is already in the format that we can publish it. There, our links are already active. So I am guessing we could probably get it published within a couple of weeks at least.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay, are we ready to head to our next subcommittee report out, which is team names?
First off, thank you. I would really like to acknowledge Commissioner Song's service on the subcommittee. We're very appreciative of all the work that she did, and we would like to announce that Vice Chair Cheng will be participating on an interim basis for the remainder of 2023. On the subcommittee. And now I'll turn it over to Commissioner Schmitz for just a quick work summary.
And I do have a quick one. Right now, what we're looking into is the RCW and the WACs that are related to team names, managing broker names and such. Once we get through those and have an understanding, then I'm sure we will have listening sessions so we can hear from the public and anyone that would like to share, you know, any concerns they have, anything that's going great, any suggestions, so that we can take them back to the subcommittee and have dialogue as to what changes do we need to make and or what's going great so we know what to keep. So that's just a quick little summary.
Thank you. And that concludes the team names report.
Great. Now we're headed into some staff reports. We have a ledge update. And Sandy, are you doing those?
Yes. Thank you very much. The first one up is Senate Bill, or SB 5399. And the department would specifically like to request that a subcommittee be formed to research and then compose a report detailing the impacts of SB 5399 to the industry. Some of the things that will need to be involved in this is examining the practices used by real estate brokerage companies, analyzing the right to purchase contracts, provide recommendations for consumer protections, potential regulations, potential licensing requirements. And this report will be due to the legislature December 1st, 2024. So this subcommittee will be temporary in duration. It will last just over a year, and we would like to request three commissioners be on this subcommittee to help with this report.
So just to clarify, 5399 was Senator Mullet's bill about the life term of a listing contract due to there were a couple brokerages out there that were doing paying a small sum for 40-year right to list.
Right.
So that's part of the bill.
Right. So
Sabrina Jones, so does Senate Bill 5399 seek to, I guess, for lack of a better term, outlaw that practice? What is Senate Bill 5399 going to do?
It limits, you can't really outlaw a practice like that, but what it does do is it limits the term of residential listing contracts to, I believe, 2 years.
So, I would be happy to serve on that subcommittee.
I'd be happy to have experience on this bill.
That's great. So we have two members. We can have up to three, but two is fine. Is there anyone else?
I saw it. Shelley raised her hand.
You're muted.
if sorry, you can use... Shelley Schmitz, and sign me up.
This is Ruth Macias. If you happen to need another one, I'm available. If you have what you have, that's great.
Perfect. We do have what we have to avoid having a quorum.
Could I then, if Ruth would like to be on the subcommittee, then I will come off so that she can participate?
Sure. Ruth, would you like to participate?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, this will need a vote. Chair Clausen?
Sure. So do we need a motion then? Do you have a motion?
I motion that we form the subcommittee for Senate Bill 5399 with myself, Vice Chair Chang, Sabrina, and Ruth to look at what we need to for the bill.
Second.
Great. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so moved. You now have your subcommittee, Sandy.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Staff will be reaching out to you and we'll start scheduling meetings. Thank you so much.
Okay, moving on to 8.2.2, Professional Service Industries, PSI update.
We have one more legislative update.
I'm sorry, Sandy.
No worries. It's 8.2.1, and this covers Senate Bill 5191. Before I go into my report, my report out in request, we did receive a public comment on this agenda item. So if you would like, I can read this public comment, which might help in the discussion after my report out. This public comment is from Carrie L. Chrismer, who was not able to attend the meeting today. It states, I will not be able to attend tomorrow's hearing in any manner, but an issue I wish to bring before the commission pertains to legislative update item SB 5191. It was passed in the legislature and the legislature was told that DOL would create rules as to what would be an abusive behavior by brokers in using buyer agency agreements. My concern is that SB 5191 requires such agreements, but imposes absolutely no restrictions on what brokers can provide in their agreement. An unscrupulous broker could create an agreement covering any type of property in the entire state with a 10-year term. If someone thinks it is unlikely, I'd point to the 3-year listing agreements used over 10 years ago by some unscrupulous brokers, and more recently the 10-year right to list agreements used by some business entities to create a right to refer sellers to brokers. The legislature failed to provide any restrictions other than a default duration, so consumers need protection from unscrupulous brokers. So that was the public comment labeled for SB 5191. Continuing on with my legislative update, the CR 101 form was filed on August 2nd of 2023, not 2022. Sorry about that. The department requests that another subcommittee be formed to assist with drafting the rule language, to assist with outreach and stakeholder work, and any other aspects of the rulemaking process that we need assistance with. Weekly meetings for the subcommittee will start August 28th, and the draft language is due September 13th. Once the draft language has been submitted, the subcommittee can move to monthly meetings for the duration until January 1st, 2024, which is when the updates filing deadlines are. There'll be more communication sent out as this process moves forward. But in the meantime, we would like to request another subcommittee be formed from now until the implementation effective date of January 1st, 2024. Again, we would like three commission members on this subcommittee, or up to three commission members on this subcommittee.
Shelley Schmidt, and I volunteer.
Eddie Chang, I'll volunteer.
Sabrina Joan Schroeder, this feels a little Hunger Game-ish, but, you know, I volunteer as tribute, right? So.
Thank you so much. We have three volunteers, and this will also need to be moved, seconded, and voted on.
Great. Do I have a motion to create this subcommittee with Commissioner Chang, Commissioner Jones Schroeder, and Commissioner Schmidt?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, so we have moved on this motion.
Thank you so much, everyone, for volunteering. The staff will reach out to you by the beginning of next week to start scheduling these meetings. Thank you so much.
So now we can move to the staff report out on PSI.
Yes, thank you so much. So for this report out for this meeting, I would like to introduce Kathy McDaniel. She is the administrator of the Central Services Unit within Business Professions Divisions, and she will be sharing some information with you all today. Go ahead, Kathy.
Thank you. Thank you, Cindy. Good morning, everyone. One of my roles in as the administrator of Central Services is contract oversight. So that is the area where I interact with PSI. Recently, in June and July, we received some complaints about exam data not transferring over correctly. With PSI's IT team and DOL's IT team working together, it was discovered that PSI actually had a system update to their system at the end of April. Upon further research, we found the problem. It was identified. The solution was put in place on August 9th, and all the files are working as expected. I also wanted to share that we have hired a new contract oversight and implementation manager, Jill McKinley, and I want to bring her and introduce you to you guys at one of the future meetings. Any questions? All right. Well, thank you for allowing me to come and spend a little bit of time with you, and have a good, wonderful rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy. Our next agenda item on staff report outs is our complaint case count. Sandy, I believe that's you again.
Yes. Thank you. So our complaint case counts, we are total open cases for this quarter are 50 cases that have been sent for investigation, 9. Total investigations completed were at 93. Total cases closed are 93. Cases that are open in the intake unit is 40. open in the investigation unit is 94, and open in the legal compliant unit is 25. I would like to say that moving forward, we are going to be adding in this report out what the top three issues are, and this is to be more in line with the core curriculum of what are the issues that are identified. So we just want to make sure that the commission keeps updated and relevant to the information given for the core as well. Okay, moving on, we have the real estate audit data. As far as audits completed, we have in second quarter, 183 audits completed and a total of 170 audits that are closed. Are there any questions about audits or the complaint data?
So this is Sabrina Jones-Schroeder, and I have a question and a comment. So if you could go back one screen to the complaint data. So the 93 investigations completed, those were all completed in the second quarter?
Yes.
Or
so this is a snapshot of everything that happens within that quarter. So 93 were closed within the second quarter of 2023.
But in terms of all years, all units, meaning it could have been an investigation that opened in a prior year, but it ended up getting closed out in that second quarter.
Correct.
Yes.
Got it. Got it. Okay. And then my comment is that I was audited. My firm was audited a couple of weeks ago, and it was my first remote audit. And the first time I've been old school for a long time, had paper files at my last audit, five years ago, I guess it was. And, so this was my first remote audit under our electronic file storage system. We use paperless pipeline. And I just want to comment on, I guess, the electronic audit system, which is to say that I think in most respects, I think it's a really great audit process on both sides, on the brokerage side, as well as I think on the auditor side. You know, the initial conversation, and then you get an email which tells you what they want. And unlike the old days, and Shelley and I were talking about this in a subcommittee meeting, the auditor would show up and you'd have to shut down your business. Like if you had things going on, God forbid, you know, I was teaching a class at Spokane Realtors and the auditor showed up. It was difficult. It became then very stressful. I can't do my job as a designated broker to help my agents that need help because I've got to deal with this audit and we, you know, just have this one day or 2 days to get this done. So the having that little bit of time to compile the data that's or the documentation that's being asked for and provide it allows us to continue running our business. And I thought that was phenomenal. And then, you know, I think on the Department of Licensing audit side, there's more significant accountability there, because of the time date stamps and the, you know, there's that written record of what's being submitted, which I think is ultimately good for our industry. There's no sliding. And from talking with the auditor, I asked her for a bit of time post audit once it was done to kind of debrief with her a bit about it. And, she agreed. So, it just really was, As audits go, it was great. It was great, comfortable, educational for me to recognize some, you know, things that we can improve upon, as most brokerages will determine. But I just want to say kudos, I guess, to the audit department for creating that system. And I thought it went really well. I was pleased with the process. So thank you.
Oh, Sabrina, that's great to hear because we've been working really hard on a couple of our values in the organization, and they really are showing up in this new process to be able to allow you all to not, I think surprise audits are not comfortable for anyone, and they actually don't get us the results that we're looking for. It's much better for you know, the IRS doesn't knock on the door and say, like, you need to turn over all your stuff, right? You get a, it, you know that they need some information, you supply some information. And us heading down a path where we can meet our licensees where they are and give them that space to be able to continue to conduct business was extremely key to us in this. So I'm sure we can still continue to improve, but it's been a great work in progress. So I'll share that with the team for sure.
Okay, great. So moving on to the final staff report is our licensee count. Excuse me. For real estate brokers, we have a grand total of 42,953. For real estate managing brokers, we have a grand total of 9,095. Next slide, please. For real estate firm counts, we have a grand total of 5,877. It's broken down into several different categories. And finally, we have the real estate firm name count. For real estate firm total, we have 16,116. And for real estate branch, we have a grand total of 1,143, and that gives us a grand total combining the two of 17,259. And with that, I'm happy to answer any licensing questions, licensing count questions.
So, Sabrina Jones Schroeder, question again, slash observation. Mm-hmm. So there are, if I'm looking at the numbers correctly, there are 5,877 firms and branch offices. No. There's 4,000, sorry. 4,271 actively licensed, I would say operating firms and branches, right? And then right. If you see the next slide, there are...
What?
10,300.
That's okay. Take them. Just be nice. It's over with.
Just a quick reminder that if you are not speaking, please put yourself on mute.
So then there's 10,363 active status, assumed names, DBA names, entity names. So if I'm doing my math correctly, right? There's 2.5, so there's, you know, 4,200 firms and 2.5 times names. So to the team name subcommittee, I would say that's sort of telling, right? That there's a whole lot of assumed names. There's a whole lot of names out there, that I think can potentially cause consumer confusion. Like really, you know, how many, there's 2.5 times the names of advertised firms out there than there are actual firms, licensed firms. I don't know what that all means. I don't know that we care, but that's a huge number. That's a lot of names floating around out there.
That is an excellent point. Thank you. Okay. Are there any other questions? All right, that concludes the licensee count.
And that takes us into our final staff report, which is our review of master action items. Sandra, it's going to be you.
Thank you. And so we have a request for research from UW that Sandy covered on the agenda, and it will be revisited again in more detail in the November meeting. Gathering data on response times for emails and phone calls, that was on the agenda. We also talked about having that be a continuation going forward until the issue has been resolved. Providing more detailed licensee count report to include percentage of increase or decrease in year over year. This is something that we have in progress. We don't currently, we just started tracking it, so it will be a little while before we have the data available in order to be substantive report. So we'll provide it when it's meaningful. And then scheduling an in-person meeting. This is something that we have been working on and troubleshooting. Currently, we have one of our regulatory boards will be meeting in person one time this year as a trial to see if we can do a hybrid meeting. The main reason being we do want to still have the remote option available for people who can't make it all the way to Olympia, just because we've had so much more public participation with this option, and we really don't want to lose that opportunity for people to be able to join remotely. So more in 2024, once we've done our testing and once we've found a time to try to get the board together.
This is Sabrina Jones Schroeder. Did you say you have a board or commission that's having a hybrid meeting this year in 2023, or you're planning that for 2024?
I believe it's in October.
I can speak to this real quick. We do have an in-person meeting planned for our funeral and cemetery board, and it's for August 24th. Hopefully it will go smoothly. We are required to have a virtual option. COVID taught us that it's possible, so now we are required to do that going forward. So hopefully the funeral and cemetery board will go smoothly, and we'll be able to take our lessons learned from that, and hopefully in the summer of 2024, we'll be able to schedule an in-person meeting for each of our boards and commissions at that time.
Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, great. So now we'll move into our public comment portion of the agenda. So this is a space for members of the public to share their thoughts, concerns, and requests with the commission. Written comments may be submitted at least 2 days prior to the meeting by emailing our DOL boards at dol.wa.gov. So there are, I ask that staff, if any comments have been submitted in writing, for them to read the comments now, and then we'll go into the public comment part. So Sandy, did we have some?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Thank you. Firstly, I see that Natalie Danielson is present, and I would like to ask her for some clarity. Would you like me to read your public comments, or did you want to verbalize your public comments? Feel free to unmute and let me know.
You can read my public comments.
Okay, thank you.
I'll do that.
So first up, I think I have an echo. How about now? Okay, perfect. So first up, we have public comments from Natalie Danielson, and it states, for the past 7 years, the managing broker exam has been an issue that needs to be addressed. Nothing has been done. It is not even on the agenda for the August 17 commission meeting. The pass rate is unacceptable. Commissioners have acknowledged this for the past 6 to 7 years. The pass rate has been about 30 to 35% for 7 years. No follow-up is being done with the testing company. Why is this important? The industry has been moving forward toward implementing teams. It is raising the standard of the broker in the industry. Many designated brokers are requiring their brokers to get a managing broker license. The exam is not weeding out brokers who do not have the ability or expertise to be managers. There is no logical reason for an exam to create an algorithm that allows only 30% to pass. Add to the DOL is requiring curriculum that is dated 2009. Why or where are the winners? PSI is getting $210 each time a person takes the exam. There are agents taking the exam up to 10 and 20 times. Most give up. They try and try. On the third try, they just walk away. They are experienced brokers there may be fraud here because PSI is not addressing this issue. I have been fighting this since 2016. If you want to know what has happened over the years, I can tell you. The Real Estate Commission has failed to move in any direction to make a difference for brokers in our state. For the past 1 to 2 years, I have written a study guide and held weekly meetings with candidates for the exam. I have tried to help them register for the exam, which is so difficult. I have tried to connect with them. I have tried to connect them with people at DOL when PSI loses their exam in the computers. All of this has been discussed for years. The DOL had these listening sessions in July of 2022. Not a single one of the pages of the issues have been addressed. There is no sample exam for the MB exam. PSI labeled a broker sample exam as MB, and it doesn't help any person taking the test. The VP of PSI has spoken at several commission meetings. She was to provide information on how to pass, on how the pass rates compare with other states. In December 2021, she said there were topic areas the candidates were having trouble with and mentioned financing as one. She said, quote, "I will provide information to help schools and candidates to be better prepared. We can share helpful information for candidates and schools. We have done a workbook for some of the other states. We can do it for your state and make it more applicable to your state." Question mark. This was never done or followed up on. Sandra decided at the last commission meeting that the MB problems no longer have to be on the agenda. We can just sweep them under the rug. Even though the WCRER was going to look into the pass rates in the country for the exam, PSI was supposed to do a follow-up with DOL. PSI was going to provide a sample exam. The listening sessions were supposed to help make the process better. The only discussion at the last commission meeting was that there is an exam that can be done at home, not proctored. Lots of discussion on that with no information, but PSI keeps losing tests in their computers. Why wasn't that addressed? DOL knows this. Something needs to be done. This impacts every brokerage in the state of Washington. Natalie Danielson, Professional Direction. We have an additional public comment from Michael Ballou to Washington State Real Estate Commissioners. I wanted to share my perspective from the practicing broker of nearly 20 years on how to improve the business on consumers and brokers. I will lay out in simple terms. 1, the complaint. 2, the injury. 3, the fix. 1, the complaint. Too many licensees to the available work. This lack of balance has been an issue through all of the markets I have seen, from the boiling market of 2005 to the frigid market of 2008 and the searing markets of 2020 to 2022. The injury. No matter the market inventory level, a superabundancy of licensees has contributed to the loss of individual value of our services to the public. If there is no scarcity, there is no value. And the public treats us like weeds. Many folks come into the business with big eyes towards empire building. It is indicated to them that the practice of real estate is easy, fun, and lucrative. Keep your own hours. Go fishing or bowling and make me as much money as you want. In reality, a superabundance of licensees creates an environment of exclusionary competition. This leads to a massive rate of attrition not seen in any other industry. With a mind toward balancing licensees with the available work, consumers now have a greater opportunity to deal with a seasoned agent who has the time to do the kind of work which I believe should be the heart and soul of all real estate practices. Research and study of the latest WAC rules, NWMLS rules and form changes, WAR rules and events coming out of the governor's office and legislature, rules coming out of our respective offices, Department of Health, zoning and building regulations, and updates from the various lending institutions. All of this instead of building marketing monuments to ourselves, stating how much integrity and honesty we have. Excessive competition drives licensees to aggressive advertising campaigns, taking 80% of our time to search for clients, instead of performing on a deeper professional level of study and research so that they can provide customers with expert, competent guidance and advice based on the market-based science. The fix. California, being the harbinger of change, has recognized this problem and passed legislation signed by their governor. AB 2745 seeks to protect consumers with new licensees to show a previous license to practice real estate that has been held within the last 5 years or 2 years of college coursework relevant to real estate. This baseline of consumer protection provides confidence to the public that the licensee they choose to work with is experienced, committed, and dedicated. This is not only the method for bringing balance to the industry. The opposition to these measures to bring balance will be met with overwhelming opposition from the beneficiaries of the status quo. The question becomes, we will take these measures ourselves or wait for the courts to do it for us. Sincerely, Michael Ballou. And that concludes the written comments.
Thanks, Sandy. So now we'll head into the open public comment for anybody that would like to speak. So members of the public, while you're addressing the commission, please remember a couple of things. Each member of the public is limited to 1 3-minute comment. Comments submitted in writing count towards the 3 minutes, which so Sandy's already read our written comments that we received. Comments must be on matters within the commission's jurisdiction, and commissioners are limited to directing staff to study the matter further or requesting the matter to be scheduled for a later discussion. I'll now open the floor for public to address the commission. So if there are anybody that would like to speak.
I would, please.
I see Mary Hall Drewy, your hand is up.
Oh, how do I raise my hand?
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Mary Hall Drewy, for the record. I would like to at least request for consideration as it relates to the discussion on the core updates for 24-25 on the residential and commercial, more specifically as it relates to Senate Bill 5191. I have heard from a series of members as well as instructors who have expressed some interest in being able to receive that education in advance of January 1, 2024, when the core would otherwise go live, because that also corresponds with the same date that 5191 is also effective, and wondered if there was any possible consideration or an exemption, knowing that the core update is to be taught starting on January 2024, but if there's any opportunity to teach that perhaps a little early. And that is the bulk of my request and consideration. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We do have our education team on the line, so that's helpful feedback. Next up, we have Bernadette Piller. Your hand is raised. Bernadette, I think you might be muted.
You are correct. I apologize. Bernadette Piller, Spokane, MLS, managing broker, designated broker. I would like for consideration the fingerprinting issue. It has consumed too much of my time. I had an agent wanting to move to my brokerage the end of last week. She is licensed through to December of 24. She had renewed in December of 22. Her fingerprints had come due between somewhere in the last few months. When we went to switch her, she had already disconnected from her previous brokerage. When we went to switch her, it wouldn't allow me to do that because her fingerprints were due. Without going into too much detail on that, it took much time on the phone to get it remedied, and she had to go back to her previous brokerage, and fingerprints were done yesterday. A feasible mind would conclude that if she was going to be fine until December of 24, then and legal, then why is that okay without updated fingerprints and not to be able to switch to a brokerage? Also, a feasible mind would conclude, why was she able to be put back to her old brokerage without updated fingerprints? That's neither here nor there. I don't want to argue with anyone about that, but the real reason for my request for consideration today is that I believe it would be extremely helpful if on the on our SAW account, if there was a column made for fingerprinting so that we could see when our agent's fingerprinting is due. I have spent way too much time on this for myself, for my other agents coming to my brokerage. My fingerprints were lost in 2020 and 2022, and I had to go through that twice. Just way too much time spent there, and I believe it would be extremely helpful if there were a column on the SAW account that not only showed agents' expirations of their licenses, but also the status of their fingerprinting.
Excellent comment. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
Excellent. I think that concludes our public comments. I don't see any other hands up.
Okay, so after receiving our written and our verbal public comment, the floor is now closed for public comment, and we'll move on the agenda to the conclusion. So under 10.1, under the announcements, looks like we have the 2023 quarter one housing and apartment market reports are available, and they were provided to the commissioners for review prior to the meeting. And we also posted copies of that report. And here is a time. Sandy, did you have more to talk about that? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that these reports from here on out will be posted on the Washington Center for Real Estate Research. We have listed the website on this slide. So if anyone member of the public would like to log on to that website, they can have access to these reports at any time. Thank you.
Great. So now we can move on to 10.2 and request for future agenda items. If anybody has one.
This is Sabrina Jones Schroeder, the most vocal of the commissioners today. So I would like to add to the commission agenda, and I'm not sure if we want to direct staff to prepare something for the next meeting, but the issue of licensed transaction coordinators, I don't know if this is, I understand this is an issue that perhaps investigation and audit department is looking at, but this is a somewhat new business practice to our industry, and it is concerning to have licensees hiring licensed transaction coordinators that by definition have to be licensed to a firm. But if a licensee from another firm hires that licensed transaction coordinator, there are confidentiality issues, there are record keeping issues. And so I just want to raise the concern. I think we need to do something at the department level to address the issue and give some direction to our licensees across the state as they consider hiring transaction coordinators, the risks, I guess, that are involved with that. That's one issue. And then per the public comment, I can't I understand I cannot comment on the public comments, but I would like to direct staff. Is that what you said we could do? Direct staff. So specifically, and I'm sure it's already on your list, but love that idea that Mary said that if it were possible, because I do think our core will be available earlier than it has been, that if instructors can get the course submitted and approved, that perhaps it could be taught before January. I think that is an excellent idea because we will be covering the changes to the agency law. So would love to have staff report back whether that's a possibility. And then with regard to the fingerprinting, and I apologize, I had meant to call that issue in. There are some issues there. I have had the same frustrations that Bernadette has had, and would love to add to the agenda, brainstorming some ideas to help figure out. I love the idea of a column that I can look at as a DB and say, you're due for fingerprints. Because I know an email is supposed to be going out to licensees when they're due. Your renewal's coming up and you need to get fingerprints this time, but either it goes out too early and they forget about it, or maybe it's going to an email that, you know, with the DOL that they don't use anymore, whatever the problem is. I've had several folks that go to renew and when they log on, they realize, oh shoot, I need fingerprints. And then they expire because there's a lag time to getting out and getting those fingerprints. So I agree. I think we might be able to help designated brokers help their licensees be aware of that. So I'd love to have staff report back at the next meeting about what we can do to help with that situation. That's it. Thank you.
Sabrina? Am I allowed to comment?
The floor has been closed for public comments.
Oh, okay. Just responding to Sabrina's. Yeah.
Okay. Any other agenda items or action items that any other commissioners would like us to take on for the next meeting? Okay, then we'll move on to 10.3, review of action items and items for the next meeting.
Thank you. And so I'm just wanting to confirm that or letting you know that I captured Commissioner Jones-Schroeder's request for licensed transaction coordinators to be added to next meeting, as well as the fingerprinting concerns and staff reporting back on whether instructors can get core course submitted and start teaching prior to 2024. I also have on the next agenda customer service response time as an ongoing item, and then the UW report, pass-fail rates with a guest speaker with more information in detail. And then also on action items, I have staff to get the percentage of incoming requests via phone calls versus emails and any additional data on the subject of calls that we can get. Which that piece I don't know that we can. And then we will include that in the staff report out section of the next agenda. And staff to schedule meetings for the newly formed subcommittees for Senate Bills 5399 and 5191.
Did we miss anything?
Sounds like you covered it.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'm getting better at it.
You're doing awesome. Okay. Well, it's now time to adjourn our commission meeting. So it is 11:23 a.m. on August 17th, and this meeting is adjourned. Our next meeting is November 16th, 2023 at 10 o'clock. See you all there.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.